Welcome to Legacy Fundraising Chat, where I talk about everything legacy related to help you as a fundraiser generate more interest amongst your supporters in legacy giving. I'm your host, Sunita Gudu, founder of Persuasion and a legacy marketer, providing consultancy training, coaching and interim support to charities of all sizes. I actually don't think my guests on this episode need an introduction. Dr. Claire Routley and Ashley Rowthorne have been in the legacy world for probably more years than they actually want to admit to. They now work very closely together under the Legacy Futures umbrella, where Claire is known as head of consultancy and Ashley Rowthorne is the founder and CEO. They've got very impressive bios, which are in the show notes for you to read at your leisure. Now, there is something the three of us all have in common. We've all worked through the ranks and we're all legacy fundraising specialists. But there's one other thing that actually gives us that common thread. Do you know what it is? You'll have to listen to the end of the episode to find out. And here's my interview with Claire and Ashley. So Claire, Ashley, welcome to the show.
Hi, Sunita. It's good to be with you.
So we've picked January to talk about charities kicking off a legacy campaign. And we're going to be talking about charities of any size. So my listener can identify where they fit in that. Just for the purposes of this episode, we'll just categorise them. So we'll say charity A is that sole fundraiser, charity probably raises under 1 million and legacy marketing is sporadic. And charity B is a dedicated legacy person. So listener, if you're someone that promotes legacy on a regular basis, perhaps you've got in-mem tagged onto your role and possibly you might be looking after a few other fundraising streams, but legacies tends to be your main focus. And you're actually part of a wider fundraising team. How amazing is that? And your charity income is likely to be over 1 million. And charity C is where there's a whole legacy department and legacies forms a very significant part of your charity's income. So Ashley, why do you think January is an ideal time for charities to be kicking off a legacy campaign?
Well, that's a great question. And first, thank you so much, Sunita, for having us on your podcast. I don't want to give the game away, but we did used to work together and I think Sunita has forgiven me. So that's good that she's trusted us to come back on and come on her podcast to speak. So I thought about this question. I thought I'd tell a quick kind of story to kind of illustrate my thinking on this. So I know, Sunita, you won't believe that I used to be young once, but when I was a teen, an early teen, maybe 12 or 13, I started a paper round. And I'm really not a morning person, but I used to get up 6 o'clock every morning, Monday all the way through to Saturday, kind of all year round, rain or shine, all for the grand total of, I think it was about £9 a week that I earned. So it was hard earned money and I wanted to spend it on the latest computer game for my Spectrum, or the latest like Now compilation tape, if people remember those. But in March, I would always get a real shock because it was my mum and my dad's birthdays were 2 days apart. And in this particular year, Mother's Day landed on the same day. So it was my dad's birthday, day off, mum's birthday and Mother's Day. And because I was working, I was expected not just to buy them a card, but a small gift. So all that hard-earned money that I just earned had to spend in Clinton's cards, and I think like a pack of walnut whips or something was as much as I stretched to. But it led me to say what lots of kids say, you know, this isn't fair, you know, why is there always a Mother's Day and there's a Father's Day, and when is it Kids Day, you know, when do we get our chance? And the unfulfilling answer that came back, which I mean, I say this to my kids as well now, it's always Kids Day. And I think that's my long-winded like approach to this question. My feeling is it should always be Legacy Day. Every day, every time of year is a great day. It's a good time to talk about legacy giving. I think definitely if we need a particular time of year to maybe clear out space in our calendars or to make sure that we can galvanize other colleagues or to work together to make sure that, you know, we give our message a bigger boost, then I think a focused like time, a week, a month is really good. But I think we shouldn't get too hung up that it needs to happen at like a specific time of year. If January works for us, brilliant. If it's February, if it's March, whatever, that's okay. And I remember hearing a talk from Ifran Hopper. He's been in the legacy sector for a long time. I think he's now still at RNLI, and he explained so well how legacy marketing, legacy fundraising, it's what he calls behind the clock marketing. So the messages that we land, the conversations we have, the letters we sent out, they get put on the mantelpiece behind the clock, whether physically or metaphorically, they sit there until it's the right time for the legacy donor to go out, make and update that will. And so January might be a really good time for many people to go out and write a will. So it's a fresh start, it's new beginnings, people have new resolutions, and they, getting out and writing their will, updating their will could well be one of them. So like a make a will nudge could be really good and timely for our considerers. But if we just reach out for the first time with our legacy messages, we could well be too late because people need time. It's not necessarily a spur of the moment decision. It takes kind of time and contemplation. So I would probably always say, getting messages out all year round, that steady drip feeding of messages that kind of fill up over time, probably maybe more effective than just a one-off thing. So that's kind of where I'm at. So I think January could be great, but I think any time is great. And actually it's something that we should be doing all the time.
That's great. Now, Claire, I'm wondering if you're going to contradict Ashley, and it's totally fine for you to do that. Is there any research, being the researcher, any evidence that people are more likely to be open to messages, these legacy messages in January, just because it's a new year, it's a new start for a lot of people? They might be starting a new job. It's often the time when people are doing that and thinking about maybe reflecting on the past.
As you say, it is a time of sort of New Year's resolutions. But I suppose after Ash's lovely positive story about his his childhood paper round slash turn into his parents, I think I'll sort of bring us down to earth with a bit of a bump and say I haven't seen really, really solid evidence from across the board as to which is necessarily the best month. But January is actually the most common month in which people will die, which is, I suppose, one of the prompts for writing a will is, losing someone close to you, changes in a family structure. So I guess as well as the sort of the positive aspects of the new year and new start that you mentioned, Sunita, I guess it's also a lot of a time when a lot of people will be aware of mortality. So sorry to bring us down with that little response, but I did dig out Fair Will, who are an online will writer, and looking at their trends for 2021, they actually found the highest number of wills written on a single day was on the 18th of February, which interestingly, that was Prince Philip's admission into hospital. And I guess it's that kind of mortality reminder, isn't it? So again, they said they saw bumps around the Omicron emergency being announced, the death of Captain Tom Moore. So I guess it's all of those things that happen to us in our lives that remind us of our own mortality that tend to drive will making. And perhaps that's perhaps why there is a bit of a peak in January. But I guess it kind of points back, so not to contradict Ashley, actually, in the sense that, as charities, we know that, losing someone close to you is a trigger, but obviously that's not a great time to be, marching up to people for the first time and starting to talk about gifts in wills. So it kind of speaks to Ashley's earlier point that actually, we should be talking about wills little and often all the time, so that when life experiences occur and we're driven to go and write a will, that the charity is already top of somebody's mind rather than trying to talk to people at, what is a going to be a really difficult time in their lives.
Even other typical life triggers for making wills, not many of them are actually good times, are they? Even like, buying a house, it's super stressful, or starting a family and all of that kind of stuff. So we could get in the way really if we just focus on those. And again, we really need to be ahead of time.
That's really interesting. And it's something I hadn't actually really considered in terms of what's happening in terms of current affairs and how much the media actually plays a role. And I suppose a lot of these wills that are made, they're very panic wills, aren't they? They're not necessarily well thought out it's more of a case of, like you said, Prince Philip was admitted into hospital, right, I better get my will sorted. And I suppose, actually, going back to your first point, that's why it's important the legacy messages that are given a lot earlier, because mm-hmm. even though the will might be updated, it doesn't actually mean that the charity is going to be included. So yeah, I guess that's important right. point, isn't it? What's really quite apparent is that there seems to be a lot around March and September. We've got the Free Wills Month, we've got Remember a Charity who run their week every September. And I'm just wondering, have you ever compared any results in terms of whether March or September is better? Or do you just kind of take the view we should just be doing this all year round?
Yeah, well, let me start with that. I think it probably depends on the type of campaign that we're doing.
Mm.
And so let's take, I mean, Sunita, when we worked together, we used to do lots of legacy events. Mm. And if you wanted to get people out of their house to go to an event, to talk to them about a charity, our vision and gifts and wills and how they might, you know, be able to support that, timing is actually really important. You know, we've got a specific window of time where people are going to come out of their house, they're going to come and visit us. You know, it needs to be kind of after the clocks have changed, but probably before the busy summer months. Many older people won't drive in the dark. I remember doing a legacy event up in the Lake District in February one year, and we were hit by a huge snowstorm, and a few brave people did kind of dig their way out and make their way in.
Gosh.
But it just meant we just didn't get the opportunity to speak. So I think timing does matter for some types of events or some types of campaigns, but we don't kind of have hard and fast data on, you know, whether if we send this campaign out, you know, on the 31st of March versus, you know, the 5th of May, whether that's going to make any difference. I don't know, Claire, sure. if you've got any experience on that.
Only anecdotally, I suppose, just thinking about my last in-house job, you know, we always used to have a slot in the fundraising calendar to send our legacy appeal in February.
Mm.
And for, I forget why exactly now, but for some reason or other, we lost our slot one year and had to send the mail in the summer, which again, you know, anecdotally, I suppose, the conventional wisdom is, you know, mail-in doesn't work quite so well in the summer. But interestingly, we saw really very similar results to we would always. So my hunch is that there's not a huge seasonality effect, which is nice to know. But I think, and Ashley might be able to speak to this one as well, well, and you, of course, Sunita, but I know there's some debate in the sector at the moment about, is it good to talk about legacies at those times you've mentioned when everyone else is talking about legacies? Mm. So I suppose you do get that halo effect perhaps from, you know, more noise in the media and on increasingly nowadays online. But at the same time, is it difficult to get any sort of cut through for your organisation in the midst of all that noise? So I think that's a really interesting point to consider.
Mm.
Yeah, I would say, you know, take September, take Remember a Charity Week. This is a brilliant time where hundreds of charities all come together to share the common message of leaving a gift to charity. And I think that focus time, it's been going on for many, many years. Everybody knows when it is. We can plan it in our calendars. We can all come together and we can amplify that broad message. And we know that if we can grow the market for everybody, kind of everybody benefits. I think then when it comes to getting your specific charity message through, which is a different kind of objective, then I think, take Claire's point, you know, there's lots of noise going on and maybe it's harder to kind of cut through. So I would always say, you know, Remember Charity Week, it primarily, this is about us coming together to grow the market for everybody, and let's stay focused on that message of leaving a gift to charity. And then our ongoing campaigns and conversations that we're having can really be about engaging with our specific cause. But then focus weeks, focus campaigns, they come with risks as well, don't they? Let's take this current year, you know, Remember Charity Week, we had a change of prime minister and then Queen Elizabeth died, and that completely dominated all of the news agenda, and it just made it impossible to, and even not the right time then to have those conversations. And fortunately, you know, Remember a Charity, I know we're able to adapt and planned kind of consumer media things, you know, they've been rearranged and we're not going to miss out on that. You know, we probably need to think through things like that with contingency and have some flexibility.
Mm-hmm. It goes back to your earlier point, Ash, really, doesn't it, about the importance of talking about legacies on an ongoing basis rather than putting all your eggs in the one basket of, you know, one week a year, really.
Definitely. And we've talked quite a bit about campaigns, and I think it'd probably be useful for the listener to know actually what types of campaigns could they do depending on what size organisation they are. And ideally, every charity would have a whole legacy department and they could market legacies throughout the year. But I think we have to be realistic, don't we, that there's always going to be small charities that do not have the capacity. So I guess just thinking about that very small organisation, that sole fundraiser, that legacy marketing, they'd like to make it a priority, but it tends to be a bit sporadic. I guess from my perspective, working with these small organisations, my advice would be to focus on one point in the year, which does go against completely, Ashley, everything you've been saying. But my rationale for that is that if there's not one point in the year, then it just never happens. Mm. And at least having one focus, then there's something to build on. And my thoughts around this is having something that is just one activity, but it has a two-step approach. So the first element, I would encourage the sole fundraiser to get a legacy inquiry leaflet made up and have this available to all their key audiences and have this available in their community. If they've got clubs, brilliant. If they've got social centres, great. If they've got a welcome desk. And then the second part of that is allowing time to do follow-ups, because we can get into this thing, right, let's market, market, market. But actually, what are we then going to do with the people that are hand-raising and are actually interested in doing something? And then it's planning in the calls and emails. And the great thing about having something like that as a focus, it can be planned a lot earlier on the year. And then it's just a case of executing it. And that could be done quite easily. And so that's my kind of thoughts on Charity A. And so I'm going to hand over to you, Ashley and Claire, to talk about that Charity B, so that dedicated legacy person. What could they be doing as a kind of a bit of a priority, I suppose, the types of campaigns?
I'll go first, if that's all right. So I guess thinking about any organisation, but say I'm thinking about a local hospice, for example, mm-hmm. you've probably been promoting legacies for a long time, or you've mm-hmm. certainly been receiving legacies. But I think with all of these, I think strategically, this is the main thing we can. We often think tactics first, what can I do? But just pause and think strategically, you know, what are our strengths? What kind of assets have we got? How can we make the most of it? So local organisation, your size is actually can be a real strength. You're not a big organisation that's, you know, maybe takes lots of time and there's loads of people that need engaging. You can maybe be a bit more nimble. You're local, so you can maybe be really personable, get people close and connected to your cause that they really care about. You can forge local partnerships, maybe with some local solicitors, or you might have some assets in terms of a small network of local shops that you can use. You might have a really committed volunteer base. Think about what your strengths are and then use those. But as with all these things, you know, I started with a story, Sunita, because people love stories.
Of course.
Gather your stories. You know, what is it? Maybe it's the story about your organization, about how it was founded with a gift in a will, or it could be, you know, amazing services that you're able to deliver because of gifts and wills, or you've got somebody who's willing to tell their story.
That's brilliant. And Claire, do you want to help our listener who's part of a whole legacy department and where legacies is a very significant form of the income, and actually what kind of campaigns actually could they do that would make more of a splash, I suppose?
Well, I think, to be honest, even in a big department, you could pick up on advice both from what you've said and from what Ashley has said already. So although, you know, I'd still advocate for having that sort of background hum of legacies all the time, I liked your point about carving out a particular time of year for legacies, because I think sometimes one of the reasons it's difficult to get legacies onto the whole organisational agenda is because it's not time critical, and almost everything else that happens in fundraising, you know, whether it's the raffle that is being drawn in May, or, you know, an event that's taking place in July, or whatever it might be, you know, they're all very sort of time critical. So it's really difficult sometimes to, you know, get legacies on the front page of the website or whatever it might be. So I really liked your advice, actually, of kind of creating a moment in the year when, you know, the organisation more widely can really sort of focus on legacy. So I think, you know, that's something that would apply to organisations of every size, really, if you're really looking to get other people on board as well. And I think, again, just, you know, as Ashley said, you know, the same would apply in a large charity, really. You know, what is it that makes you sort of special and distinctive? What are those strengths that you can really kind of leverage? I think that would equally apply to a large organisation. I guess on top of that, though, what large organisations have is, you know, straightforwardly, bigger budgets. So, you know, they can potentially use different channels. TV is one that springs to mind. You know, and we know that television advertising is something that, you know, the larger charities have really kind of invested in for legacies generally. One of the ideas that I don't think we've kind of fully worked out yet, have we, Ashley? But one of the ideas we're really sort of thinking about and working on is that relationship between brand and legacies. You can see increased legacy income amongst some of the organisations that, you know, have got a big brand presence, have been, you know, fortunate enough to have, you know, TV series made about them, that all those sorts of brilliant things as well. So, you know, again, I suppose in a bigger organisation, you probably do have time and space to think very strategically about your brand and, you know, the relationship between wider fundraising investment and your legacy investment. So I suppose you can really utilise those kind of wider skills within the organisation to benefit your legacy income as well. Which, again, you know, is not to say, again, those ideas can sort of filter down into the smaller organisations as well. But I think it's definitely something that the bigger organisations perhaps have the money and the expertise to be able to utilise.
To do things bigger, for sure. Mm-hmm. So something I just want to pick up on that you both talked about is skills and the strengths within an organisation. I'm sure you both approach in this way as well when you're working with your clients, is seeing actually what is it that you already have and what is it that you need to go and get. So I guess there's that split of what can you do in-house and what can you actually outsource? Just thinking about the sole fundraiser, the example that I've given of that having that one activity and the point in the year. And I would say that listener could create those materials in-house. They don't have to look shiny and glossy. Well, in terms of the creative, I mean, they just need to be real, and they can definitely do the messaging in-house. But I would actually encourage charities to do their printing and actually outsource that, because I think that's where sometimes things can really fall down. I've seen things that are created that I think potentially they could have looked a lot better and they could have been a lot more appealing. Because let's face it, if somebody doesn't pick up the leaflet and if it doesn't look great and it doesn't feel great, it's probably not going to feel like a good read or a good experience. And so do you have any kind of thoughts around what charities should absolutely keep in-house and should be looking at outsourcing depending on their skills and strengths? Ashley, I'm going to hand it over to you first.
Yeah, I mean, this obviously totally depends from charity to charity, but I'm thinking, you know, if you're a small organisation and maybe you're the only person, I guess capacity is an issue, isn't it? There's only so much time in the day. There's lots of priorities. Legacy might only even be a bit of your role as well, and you've got to focus on other things. So I think there's often, it can be really valuable about bringing in external support, particular times. Now take, we talked about strategy, take developing your strategy and refreshing that. I think it can be really valuable bringing an outside perspective, someone who can help facilitate the discussion, who can be a partner to you, who can challenge you, can maybe share knowledge and experience, help you kind of see the wood from the trees, because you can often be just so close to what you're doing. But I'd say even with that, ultimately it's your strategy and you need to own it. You can definitely bring in partners, you know, people like Sunita, brilliant, who can help you do that. But you need to make sure that you still own it, that you as an organization believe in it, can kind of make sure that you can lead it, embed it right through. But then much more practically, like Sunita talked about, you know, outsourcing certain things, printing, whatever. I think capacity, when it can be limited, getting in some outside help, whether it's just temporarily or even longer term, can be really valuable. We in our Legacy Link team, we do a huge amount of hands-on support for charities through the probate and estate administration.
Yeah.
And most of that actually is with small charities.
Okay.
You know, those that maybe don't necessarily have the skills or time in-house, you know, somebody else externally can just come in and do that really quickly and really cost-effectively. And it might only be a handful of hours when it could be taking you days and free up your time. So thinking about how you can use things efficiently, it might feel like it's a cost and an expense, but actually it's bringing a lot of value. So it could be interim support for a specific campaign or plugging a gap while you kind of work out what to do, but what to keep in-house. I think, you know, some of those things are hard to outsource around your culture, around engaging your staff, leadership, maybe relationship management of your legacy donors. Like Sunita's brilliant at, you know, having those conversations and having those follow-ups and ongoing conversations. You potentially could outsource some of that for a bit, but it's probably better if it is owned by you and your organization. Yeah. That's just my thoughts.
That is a really good point, because we do talk a lot about relationships, and relationships happen over a period of time. And so I do think it is quite difficult for an external person to start that relationship and have those conversations with a pledger or a legacy inquirer, then to kind of hand that over and go, actually, I was just the interim or the consultant in this scenario, and I kind of need to step away. I think, well, with any relationship, it takes time, doesn't it, to build? And that's a really good point, actually, that really absolutely has to be worked on in-house. Based on your kind of breadth of experience, what do you think really holds back my listener or fundraiser from really shining in this area of legacies? Ashley, what's your thought?
Oh, that's a great question. I think having the organisation and the leadership of the organisation kind of backing you and what you're doing and committing to you and giving you the resources and the budget that you need, which doesn't necessarily need to be a lot, but it needs to be prioritised and it needs to be committed to. And I think that can really often hold people back of almost, yeah, we need to do legacies and we'll delegate it down there, but it's kind of up to you, and you are the resource and you need to get on with it, versus those organizations that really understand it's something that needs to be led from the top and really kind of threaded right through the organization. That really then empowers you to do your job much better.
Claire, what's your thoughts? What really holds a fundraiser back from shining bright?
I'd second what Ashley said again.
Yeah.
But also, I think, you know, broader cultural attitudes towards death, dying, legacies. And I think, you know, Remember Charity has made amazing strides, you know, since its inception, but it's such a culture change is such a long, slow burn, isn't it? So I think, you know, we mustn't think that the job is done in that way.
That's brilliant. Well, unfortunately, we do have to end the interview there, because I have promised my listener that all the episodes will be under 30 minutes, but the three of us could talk for days, weeks and months and years, couldn't we, on this topic, because we're all so super passionate. Yes, that's true. That's true. Which is why I've got the podcast, I suppose. But thank you so much for coming on the show. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Listener, without the help of Google, did you work out what Claire, Ashley and I have in common? Well, we have all worked at Older People's Charity Royal Voluntary Service, although not at the same time. Claire was their first supported care manager, I their first legacy development manager, and then Ashley joined to head up the legacy department. Thank you so much for listening to Legacy Fundraising Chat, brought to you by Persuasion, a consultancy training and coaching organisation helping fundraisers just like you. Thank you also for everything that you do for your cause in the charity sector, making it an inspiring place to work. I'm your host, Sunita Gudu, championing your legacy fundraising efforts.